Let's go back in time to 1932 as Converse brings you historic footage of the legendary original Celtics with whom all great professional teams are compared.
We have now taken over your radio.
Richie Guerin is about to show you the most important step in getting past a man. It's the first one.
And Oscar will inbound it. The men in green, the Milwaukee Bucks, that's Al Cinder against Bellamy.
Has Jordan. Allen shakes free. Gets two!
Gilmore on a big step!
Oh,
brother! Lead Toledo artist. You get 21.
4:28 to go in the first quarter for the Cal Palace. Here's Barry.
Jordan. Open. Chicago with the lead!
Hello, and welcome back to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. I am Jason Mann, and with me as always is Rich Kraich. Rich, great to be back with you.
Absolutely. Keep on chugging through these top 50s.
Indeed.
I like it.
Yeah, for those who are new to the program, we are talking about, we've been talking about the top 50 NBA players of all time, and we are now going through more modern players and kind of going through the strengths and weaknesses of their candidacies. And to help us today with Ray Allen is Seth Partnow, the editor of Nylon Cactus, returning to the show. Seth, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's been a while.
Yeah. Last time you were with us to talk, Reggie Lewis. I almost said Reggie Miller. Reggie Lewis, which was an enjoyable early program on the podcast for those who are interested. I would definitely recommend that. But today we are going to chat about the case for Ray Allen in the top 50. Going to go through just some of the basic things for him before we kind of get into the discussion. He is 28th all time in win shares, 92nd in win shares per 48, 64th in box score plus minus, and 25th in value over replacement player. He has been on the all NBA second team one time and the third team one time. He has had one season where he was in the top 10 in win shares per 48 and one time in the top 10 in value over replacement player. He is second all time in free throw percentage, first all time in three pointers. Probably given volume and percentage, maybe has a case for being the best three-point shooter of all time. And some of the other rankings, he is 62nd in the Bill Simmons pyramid of 96 players, and in his book, The Book of Basketball, and in the Slam magazine top 500 players of all time, he is 79th. And I think some of his strengths, he's been excellent in the roles, both as a leading scorer for a team and as mostly a three-point shooter running off screens with other guys more creating the scoring. But he has sort of the versatility in doing both. So Seth, what do you think about Ray Allen?
I think that the first thing you think of when you think of Ray Allen is obviously the shooting. You talked about some of the numbers and also just the aesthetics of his jump shot. He is, I think, probably the closest to like the pure video game jump shot form of all time, just in terms of both his shot mechanics. But he's also a guy who, had really good mechanics on the release and stuff like that while like getting great elevation. And that's kind of one of the things that always allowed him to be more than just a shooter, was the fact that he could elevate so well and get that shot off over people too, kind of off the dribble and quickly on catch and shoots and stuff like that. And a lot of his kind of signature playoff moments are kind of him hitting shots with guys draped all over him simply because he could elevate over them, whether it's, shots he hit over Joe Noah in some of those Celtics Bulls playoff series, or kind of the shot, in the 2013 finals for Miami.
Well, one of the things that always, you mentioned a shooting form, and I think that's absolutely something, the repeatability of it as well. Like, that's a guy where if you saw a clip of him playing in, 1999 or 2002 or 2013, it looked the same, like, every single time. And it's just amazing to think that, like, every year, nothing, he didn't get a hitch ever. It was always just, like, so perfect.
And that's
no matter what year.
And
it's crazy.
And that's kind of, you hear a lot, he's almost a golfer in terms of,
right,
of the OCD of of kind of his routine of getting to the gym at this time and shooting this number of shots from this spot, and just the routine that's kind of honed every kind of, you know, extraneous motion or bit of time off of that shot. And the really interesting thing about that is that even if you've watched him through the years, he's got a very distinctive, yet in typical Ray Allen fashion, understated three-point celebration. And this always stuck out to me, like he would elevate, shoot, hold his follow through for just a beat, the ball would go through, and as he would turn up the court, he would kind of make a little count it motion, with his hand by his side. And it was really amusing because, again, even on the shot, you know, that shot to force overtime against the Spurs, before he starts jumping around like a crazy person celebrating like you would, that's still part of his routine on that shot. You can only see it on a couple of angles of the replay, but he lands, the ball goes through, he makes the little gesture, and then he starts jumping around and celebrating. I thought that almost encapsulates him perfectly. That just even his celebration is kind of practiced and perfected.
Yeah, you know, for one thing that's interesting, I think, is that, you know, he does have, you know, pretty strong career marks, but doesn't really have like a number of like great individual seasons. Like his best seasons, I would think, are more like, you know, very good on the offensive end.
Yeah, and you know, he was a guy who could be the leading scorer, but as the leading scorer, he was not like a Tracy McGrady who you just throw him the ball and say go ahead. But his real, in kind of almost that I don't want to say a complimentary role because that's selling him short a little bit, but in that not always asking to be creative, that role is really kind of where he almost was best. Because it allowed him to both he himself and the threat that he presented with that shot kind of maximized his ability to influence an offense.
Yeah. What do we think of the fact that he was the most important player, at least, the star on one of the worst defensive teams in history? I believe the 06 Sonics in terms of defensive rating. And then 2 years later was, you know, still an important, although obviously not really on the defensive end, of one of the best defensive teams of all time, or certainly, you know, a standout defensive team at the time.
I think you can make an argument that those Celtics were among the best defensive teams of all time. A few things there. One is, first of all, he plays one of the less important defensive positions, I think it's mm-hmm. safe to say. And also that's one of those things that I think he was always, when he wasn't needed to be the do everything guy on offense, he was always at least a competitive defender. May not have been great, although he's a guy who, you know, in certain matchups, I mean, he was a guy who battled the heck out of Kobe Bryant, for example. There's always been rumors of kind of bad blood between those two players, and no one's ever really fully explained why. But as kind of a low-key NBA feud, but not having to do everything on offense allowed him to be even more of a like a competent, solid defender. And you know, when you put the other guys around him, you know, Rondo at his defensive peak, and Garnett and Perkins and Paul Pierce, another kind of underratedly solid defender, all of a sudden, and you put them with a wizard like Thibs as the defensive coordinator. You get a great defense there.
Just taking a look at sort of his position in his era. We've been doing this for all the top 50 guys. So just a few little nuggets and stats that kind of come up so we can sort of see how we rank him among, you know, guards, of his era he played, and then guards of all time as well. Strictly start with the era. He's 23rd in points per 36. He's 31st in three-point percentage, 18th in effective field goal percentage, second in win shares, and third in value over replacement players. So that's his era and position. Then if we look all-time position, 81st points per 36, 30th in three-point percentage, 28th in effective field goal, 9th in win shares, and 10th in value over replacement players. So again, we see the thing where, you know, he doesn't necessarily stand out in terms of those amongst his peers, but he stands out in the sense that he the longevity was there, and he remained consistent for a long period of time, which helps him in those rate stats, you know, like a win shares and you know, value over replacement as well. Seth, what do you kind of think about him versus other, you know, shooting guards or other guys of his position, all time and of his era?
I think that's the longevity is an interesting way to put it, because he's got, I mean, shooting is kind of the classic old man skill. You know, if you can shoot, you can play forever, basically. But part of that was also he kept himself in such kind of great shape that he was able to be slightly more up until maybe his last year in Miami, you know, always able to be just slightly more than, you know, kind of the designated shooter kind of guy. As far as where to put him all time, it's, you know, it's a tough comparison, because when you're talking about all time players, you're mostly talking about guys who, all right, throw him the ball and let him work. And, you know, he, like I said earlier, he could do that, but really he was, you know, almost the most qualified second or third guy, rather than really maximizing himself as the top guy. And that's, and it's hard to, you know, is the 40th best, like, individual creator better or worse than the second best guy off the ball? Just throwing numbers out there, obviously, but the second best guy off the ball of all time. I mean, which would you rather have? For a lot of teams, having that guy who you just had to pay attention to no matter where he was and no matter where the ball was on the floor is insanely valuable. And I think that's, I think almost on those terms, he'd be even more appreciated if his kind of late prime was today than you know, 10 years ago when it actually was.
You know, Rich, offline, you told me that that Allen's numbers were slightly less than you would have expected, where I kind of thought that they were better than I expected. What were you kind of – well, where did he fall short or that from what you were expecting?
I think one of the things that we looked it up too, because I think you in our show notes you put a question and posed it to us and said, you know, does being perhaps the best 3-point shooter ever in terms of high percentage and high volume get him in? And I said, yeah, you know what, on initial thought, yeah, it would probably make sense that would be, you know, top 50 worthy, just knowing what Ray Allen is. So I went a little deeper and I wanted to see kind of looking at his percent and looking at, you know, the attempts per game. And I looked at everybody who shot over 40% from three with at least five 3-point attempts per 36. So just to get an idea of guys that are relatively high volume and high percentage, I thought Ray Allen was going to be a very rare guy in that case, and he really isn't. The problem, though, is he's sort of ahead of his time when I read off these names. Basically, here's everybody else that's in the club with him. There's only eight others. It's Steph Curry, Anthony Morrow, which that shocked me, Danny Green, Klay Thompson, Daniel Booby Gibson, that also shocked me, Brent Barry, Ben Gordon, J.J. Redick, and then Ray Allen. So, you know, not necessarily that's a bad list to be on or anything like that. I just thought Ray Allen would kind of stand out, you know, more in that sort of sense. And then also when I looked, he ranked eighth among those guys in terms of 3-point percentage. So you look at a guy who, yeah, I mean, the volume and everything is there, but I don't know. I thought he was going to jump off the page in a lot of the ways that we were looking at. Like a lot of these guys that we have explored a little bit more, I've said, oh, wow, they were really, you know, so good at this. Whereas, you know, Ray Allen, obviously, all-time legendary 3-point shooter, but, you know, percentage-wise, it doesn't really stack up. But, you know, he stacks up in the right stats and in terms of just being consistent over the course of the years, he has that. But I just was expecting him to just jump off the page a little bit more, and I don't know if he necessarily did in terms of just raw points per game stuff. So I don't know.
If I can counter that a little bit, of those names, of those names you read off, like, aside from Steph, those are all guys who are basically just shooters.
You know exactly, I mean? Right.
And that's where, you know, he's one of the best just shooters ever, plus this other stuff. Now, you know, what Steph Curry is doing now is, you know, pretty incomparable. But Ray Allen, when he was, you know, so, like you said, a little bit ahead of his time in terms of that. And so I think that's, you know, you have to give him a bump above a lot of those other guys just because he was a much more focal point of the offense. I think if you look down, like, almost the career usage of the rest of those players, he'd be, you know, right there or probably second to Steph on that among those players you just listed off.
Yeah, and that's why I became, you know, it's not necessarily that I'm putting down Ray Allen's career as general. I'm just looking at him from the scope of the top 50 and saying, okay, look, we got 50 guys in the history of the NBA that we got to talk about. You know, Ray Allen, you know, initially before we had done any of this research, I would have said, yeah, he's a guy that's absolutely contender. I don't know. I don't know what your guys' thoughts are.
Where,
I guess we'll
where do
get
you,
to that
where
point.
Have you talked about Reggie Miller yet? And where do you have...
That I was going to bring that up because, I talked to Ian Levy about Reggie Miller.
That was not in part.
Yeah. And we talked a little.
Should have found somebody else for that. But.
Yeah. Yeah. We talked a little bit, you know, we kind of compared the two a little bit. And honestly, like, I mean, they really, you know, obviously the surface comparisons are there, but if you look at them, you know, their careers are, you know, very, very similar numbers wise. Mm-hmm. I mean, they really are kind of there. Like, I would sort of think, you know, just without, you know, if you just were making me choose without like doing much research and doing the deep thing, just like who I would sense would be the better player, I would pick Reggie, but it would be close.
And I think so much of that is, you know, his personality driven rather than skill driven, but that's, because, you know, Reggie Miller is a big, boisterous personality, and mm-hmm. Ray Allen is not that.
Yeah. Well, where do you – is there anywhere in particular you think Miller falls short to Allen?
The first thing is Reggie Miller was an awful defensive player, and you know, Allen was at minimum, you know, competent. There was times where he was on some bad defensive teams, as you noted, but he's also on – again, a starter, big minute player on one of the best defensive teams of all time. So that's kind of the, and also I just don't like Reggie Miller. So that's, you know, that has much more to do with post playing career than anything during. Sure. I'll say that diplomatically.
They're close and they're both, I think, in the around the same tier, as in they're in the conversation, but I can't put either one like as a probable, you know, on the list. It's still possible, but you know, they're close, but definitely not in yet. Once we kind of obviously go through more players and look at it, you know, we'll kind of have to see.
Sure.
So Seth, you have a Ray Allen story to tell us, I believe.
Will this turn the tables? Will he be a definite top 50 after this?
I mean, I think this probably will indicate that I'm, first of all, as a, you know, as a Celtics fan, I'm obviously not unbiased in this either. But this will kind of, remove any kind of veneer of impartiality, from my assessment of Ray Allen. So it's a story that will also date me, I think, but in any event. So I live in, and I grew up in Alaska, and in Alaska, there's every Thanksgiving, there's the Great Alaska Shootout, which is a college basketball tournament. Before they kind of changed some of the NCAA rules about when you could go to tournaments and getting extra games and stuff like that, used to get really strong fields, had, you know, a couple top 10 preseason teams every year, usually. And in 1995, Ray Allen was a preseason All-American. UConn was probably top three or four team in the country. They were coming up to play in the shootout. Now, you know, my family's has been up here for a while, and so my dad supports the local program. And what they used to do is they'd have, since it was over Thanksgiving, they'd have kind of the student athletes from schools kind of have Thanksgiving dinner with people in the community, just to give it a little more of a home for Thanksgiving feel, because Thanksgiving, you know, that's the kind of holiday it is. And so we had hosted, players for a couple different years. We had a couple of kids from University of Virginia the year before, Eastern Michigan the year before that. So they call my dad up this year and say, would you be interested in hosting some players? And UConn is in your area of town. It's like, yeah, well, sure. Can we make a request? Maybe Ray Allen can come. And like, well, we don't usually get requests. We'll see what we can do. And so they call back and say, yeah, expect him around this time with the SID and another player. Now, the important thing to remember is this is my freshman year of college, so I'm not there. So I don't see any of this. But in any event, if Thanksgiving comes, the doorbell rings, Ray Allen is there. He's from a military family, so he's dressed in a sharp suit, very polite, very proper, yes ma'am, no ma'am, perfectly delightful dinner conversation, except for one point in the dinner when they're just kind of passing everything around family style like they did in my house, where he asks someone to pass the potatoes. Now, my mother, in her family, they never had potatoes as a starch. They had rice growing up, so she always prepared rice instead of potatoes. And so she says, I'm sorry, Ray, we actually always have rice instead of potatoes at this end. And for the one time the entire evening, his like veneer of politeness just cracks, and he pulls this enormous like stink face at what is this crazy lady saying? Why are there no mashed potatoes at Thanksgiving? But that passes for a moment, and he manages to kind of click back in and perfectly delightful conversation. Now, I'm telling this story to this is my freshman year of college, where me and my college teammates are playing at a tournament in Chicago, and I'm telling the story to them, and they're like, "Sure, Ray Allen had Thanksgiving dinner at your house. Why would we believe that?" So until about a week later, when we get back to school and a package shows up at the post office, and it's a glossy photo of Ray Allen, my sister, and an exchange student who were staying at our house, holding up a sign that says "Where's Seth?" So, and that I've never gotten like anything signed by an athlete, but if I was ever to get anything signed by an athlete,
that'd be perfect.
It would be Ray Allen signing the "Where's Seth" photo for me. So that's my Ray Allen Thanksgiving story.
I do have one question to your story. You said Eastern Washington was there. Did Earl Boykins ever eat Thanksgiving dinner at your house?
No, it was Eastern Michigan, not Eastern Washington.
Oh, I heard wrong.
Yeah,
I was really excited. Never mind.
Yeah, no,
nobody's Eastern Michigan.
that would have been about the same time though.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah. Okay, so Eastern, I don't know anybody from Eastern Michigan. So.
No, Earl Boykins was Eastern Michigan, though, wasn't he?
Oh, was he? Yeah. Okay, never mind.
But I think that was a little bit before he was,
never mind.
Early 90s. So that's my Ray Allen story, and, you know, it's a treasured family story. So,
go ahead. Oh, that is as good a note as any to end the show, but we will, we're going to have Seth back on later for talking about more players, so look forward to that, and of course, you can check us out at harborparoxysm.com, and we'll be back soon.